The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Glory to you, O Lord. Jesus took Peter, James, and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no fuller on earth could bleach them. Then Elijah appeared to them along with Moses, and they were conversing with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus in reply, "Rabbi, it is good that we are here. Let us make three tents, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He hardly knew what to say. They were so terrified. Then a cloud came, casting a shadow over them. From the cloud came a voice, "This is my beloved Son. Listen to him." Suddenly, looking around, they no longer saw anyone but Jesus alone with them. As they were coming down from the mountain, he charged them not to relate what they had seen to anyone, except when the Son of Man had risen from the dead. So they kept the matter to themselves, questioning what rising from the dead meant. The Gospel of the Lord. Okay, first the obvious. Can you tell that one of my penances is to give up caffeine? Can you? It's like, I hear it in my voice. I'm not trying to be sullen. This is exciting stuff. It's just, I'm not drugged up anymore, so I don't know what to tell you. That's number one. It's a great gospel passage. You know, it only dawned on me, I don't know, the past few years or so that we always encounter the transfiguration of Jesus the second Sunday of Lent. So that's a thing. And then I say, well, I'm not sure that I understand why. Why is that? And I know that there are answers. I just don't really like them. I don't find them too compelling. So I'm kind of at the start of my second Sunday of Lent transfiguration reflection, pulling that all together thing. So if it sounds half-baked, my friends, it's because it is, okay? If the reflections sound that way, it's because they are. Okay, but I tell you why, because there's something I misunderstood for some time, the way that the prayers of this Mass are framed as well. So I thought that they were suggesting here that Jesus was transfigured before his apostles so that they could overcome the scandal of the cross, something like that, so that the cross for them was not a stumbling block, right? But we know what the passion narratives are, and the disciples all fled. So if that was the point, it didn't really do it. And then if you believe that line of thought, then it's like, well, then maybe there was nothing. Maybe then the transfiguration wasn't what it was supposed to be. And then I start asking, then why do we keep revisiting it? You know, this second Sunday of Lent. But it's not the way the prayers of the Mass are structured. It's not the way that the church's reflections go on the transfiguration. It's more that I believe from the time that here Jesus is seen on the mountain shining in glory before his apostles, from that point on to his death and resurrection, nothing is by chance. Now, they would have known that before hanging out with Jesus. They would understand that already. But their sensitivity to the fact that here, right, a stake in the ground, this is what he's doing, this is why he's doing it, everything from this point on, although it had been already, right, but everything from this point on, imbued with purpose and all the rest, we better pay attention. That voice from the clouds, listen to him, right? See Jesus, follow him closely, the rest. That, like, no mistakes and all the rest, all the way to the cross. I think that is significant. Why? Because When Jesus comes down the mountain, after this event, when Jesus comes down the mountain with his apostles, what faces him? I like to say the valley road. Right? I like to say, maybe some of you live on valley. Anyway, the valley road, right, is like, it's not taking the low road. You know, we hear that as like being underhanded, but it's like taking the road of service, taking the road of suffering. In another word, it's going the way of love. Patient, suffering, love. And from this point on in the gospel, all the way through the cross, that's what we see at every step. Okay, so why is this? I think that's enough reflection, but why is this significant for us? I think for any number of reasons. One is, I'd like to say, what precedes the revelation of Jesus shining in God's glory is their journey up the mountain. And I was there, was I there last year? It seems like 5 years ago. You know, like, I was at Mount Tabor a year ago, which is where they have the Basilica of the Transfiguration. There's a mountain that kind of competes for, you know, actually this is where Jesus was transfigured. Either way, these are massive mountains. This is not you know, I used to think like a trip up the top of the Torn was a significant adventure. Now, look, my legs were like half as long as they are now, okay, so I'm allowed to say that. But this Mount Tabor, Mount Hermon, these are mountains. These are real mountains. And Jesus taking his disciples up there, that was not like a nice day trip, you know? It was arduous journey. And a little bit treacherous. Had to take the right course and all the rest. And Jesus is leading, right? So they have to trust him. They have to trust his intention, his design, all the rest, in order to go. So what's happening along the way for them to get to the top of the mountain is they have to keep going beyond themselves. They have to live outside of themselves. You know, sometimes when we lie around, we get trapped in ourselves, just think about what we want and all the rest. But taking on an arduous journey like the one that they took on here to get to the top of the mountain, they would not have been trapped in themselves. They would have been going beyond themselves. Now, so this is the first point, is that our Lenten journey, our Lenten path, has to take us beyond ourselves. And in prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, it does precisely that. And if we prepare ourselves by praying, fasting, and giving alms, following Jesus all the while, then we are likely to see the glory of God in the ordinary circumstances of our lives. We may not have this mountaintop experience, except for the fact that this is a mountaintop experience. And maybe we can only see this, maybe we can only see the Eucharist, we can only see Jesus and receive him in all his glory if we're going beyond ourselves. Yeah? So that's the first. The second is this. I'll close with this. The second is this. Jesus, this is the mountaintop experience, right? This is glory and all the rest. But we have to come down the mountain. And it's not like we have to come down the mountain. Jesus has to come down the mountain. And he wants to come down the mountain with us. So encountering Jesus, seeing the glory of God shining in him, knowing that he is our traveling companion on the way, we are encouraged to go his way in our routine, ordinary, day-to-day lives. And that way is the way of love. Who does Jesus appear with in this scene? Moses and Elijah, representing the law and the prophets. Think back when Jesus is asked about the greatest commandment. What is the greatest commandment in the law? Rabbi, what is the greatest commandment in the law? You shall love the Lord your God with your whole heart, mind, soul, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. Right? You shall love the Lord your God. The first is this. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, all your strength. The second is like it. Your neighbor is yourself. On these two hang the whole law and the prophets. The whole law and the prophets is about going the way of love, going the way of love of God and love of neighbor as self. That's the way Jesus walks, going down the mountain. That's what his apostles are paying attention to in excruciating detail. Listening to him as they go to see just what the way of love is and how they are to walk it also with him and then in their lives as they go. That's us too, my friends. Our one concern as Christian people, called by Christ to be his people, is to go the way of love with him, to make God the very center and source of our lives, and to bring his love to life in the world. That's it for us. If it sounds like not enough, we have to open our ears to Jesus. We have to listen to him. And listening to him, we'll see then where it is we're meant to go, what it is we're meant to do, in order to take up our share of bringing God's love to life in his world.